Daf Chesam and Aleph.
Is this recording?
Are we all together?
Yeah.
Is this recording?
Okay. We are looking at the Gemara that's 12 lines above the bottom of the Daf. But let's just reiterate what it says in the Mishnah so we can pick up the Gemara. The Mishnah, which is earlier on your Daf, quotes Abba Shol. And that's in the last three lines of the Mishnah. Abba Sholom there, Ma Chativas Eitzim Rishus, Af Kol Rishus. The Torah presents the scenario of a Rotzeach B'Shogeg, who's Chayev Golus, in the case of Chativas Eitzim, meaning that the Torah describes a situation in which the Rotzeach meets the Nirzach in a yar, in some sort of a forest, while he's cutting down trees. And the Pasuk says, Asher Yovo Esrei Ehu Bayar. Meaning something that's parva, it doesn't have any sort of complexion, it's not compulsory, it's not the fulfillment of a mitzvah. You want to do it. And how would you answer that question? How would you classify chativas eitzim, cutting down trees?
Is that a mitzvah? And what he's cutting it down for?
Well, if I look in the Torah itself, do I find a situation where the Torah commands me to cut down trees? Now, there may be cases.
If it's a, what do you call it?
You have to be more specific.
I know.
It's something to do with oranges, I'm sure.
Oh, if you had planted it, let's say, in a vineyard or something. Kaline?
Yeah, ah, maybe that's a case where you're not allowed to eat the fruits. But where would the Torah say to me, I have to. Now, there may be cases, scenarios, which the Gemara is going to pick up, where I need trees. I need wood for a fire. That's called Atzei Maracha. I need trees to build the sukkah, and so forth and so on. But does the Torah actually compel me or obligate me to cut down trees? So according to Abba Shol, that's the kuz. That's what the Mishnah is telling us in the name of Abba Shol, that when the Torah formulates the case of golus as a chativas eitzim situation, it's telling me that we're dafka talking about rishus. No one's obligated to cut down trees. And why is it so important? So that's called a miut. The Torah tells me in this case, these are the ingredients that go into golus, these are the preconditions, but not in other cases. Yatza to the exclusion of, and now we give a whole list of cases where violence is a mitzvah. And if you kill someone inadvertently because you're fulfilling the mitzvah, then you don't go into golus because that's not chativas eitzim. A chativas eitzim is a rishus. Everyone together. Chativas eitzim is a rishus. I just want to see you're awake, right? As opposed to the cases of a mitzvah. So what are the cases of a mitzvah? So he's got three cases. Ha'av ha'makes b'no. That's pretty fascinating. You know, my father used to always say that when he took child psychology in the 1930s, then the philosophy was you don't hit a child under any circumstances. In fact, the school of thought was such that you don't even reprimand the child. You just let the child grow up. Things have changed somewhat in psychology today, but nevertheless, you know, child abuse is a very heavy issue. But here we have the second case, Harav Haroda Es Halvido. Wow, that's an even more fascinating issue. Would you say that I can, well, okay, present company excluded, but I, you know, a Rebbe can hit a child. And not only is that acceptable, but it's even a mitzvah, as if to say he's required to do so. And then we get to the third case, which is the case of Shliach Bezdin. And Rashi in the Mishnah says that a Shliach Bezdin Amalke Arboim Lechayev Malkus is the guy who, by the way, is not very strong. That's halacha later on in the Masechta Makkos, because you don't want a tough guy who will kill me here, the person who's getting Malkus, but he's giving out Malkus, and as a result, lo and behold, the tragedy occurs, and the recipient of the Malchus dies. That's how Rashi formulates the third of the three cases of mitzvah that Abishol formulates. But this is a very problematic Rashi. I'm going to present to you the objection of the Meiri to Rashi, and then I would like, because I'm totally confused as to how to defend Rashi, I'd like to present to you the Raivid's interpretation of Shliach Bezdin. According to Rashi, the Meiri asks, Mimanafshach. Mimanafshach means, no matter how you slice the cake, you're always left hitting up against the brick wall here. You're not going to be able to solve this problem. If the Shliach was fulfilling exactly what he was told by the Bezdin, and we're going to learn later on that Malchus requires an umdana. Does anybody know what umdana is?
An estimation.
Exactly. They have to estimate the person, you know, send them to a good physician who can tell us exactly how many Malchus this man can tolerate physically, which is a function of many different factors in health. So let's assume that there was an umdana, and the Shliach Bezdin was fulfilling exactly what Bezdin had told him to do. They said that this person could take, let's say, all 39 Malkus, he can tolerate it, and lo and behold, the man dies. Is there a Havamina here that we would send the Shliach Bezdin into Golus? Even without the Drasha of Chativus Eitzim. You recall, again, just to refresh your memory, since we started this parak, we always established that there are three categories in unintentional murder. There's something called Karov Lemezid, where it was a very profound negligence. There's something called Karov Leones, in which you're not guilty at all. There's nothing you could have done to prevent the death. And then there's right in the middle that Shogi case where Yechayev goes. Where would you classify the case for Shliach Bezdin if there was an Umdana and he's simply fulfilling what he's obligated to do insofar as he's the Shliach Bezdin? What would you call that?
It's
an honest. So why would anybody even dream that he should go to Golos? And we need a drasha to teach me that he's exempt from Golos. Then says the Meiri, there's another possibility that Rashi may have in mind. He hit him more than he was supposed to. Meaning, he was meant to beat out, let's say, 39 Malkus, and he gave him a 40th clock. So the Meiri says even that, for sure, is out of the pale of Golos. Why? That's called Karov Lemezid. That's a very profound negligence. In fact, the Mishnah is going to say later on exactly how they count out the Hurachim Yechaprava, or 13 times 3, in order to make sure that he doesn't overstep his bounds and add another Malka. So if this guy was Malka more than what the Bezin allowed him or commanded him to do, then certainly he's Karov Lemezid. So there's no rhyme or reason why we would need a pasuk to teach me that he's part of me. I find the Meiri's kasha very, very profound. However, the Raivid has a different shot in that Mishnah. The Raivid suggests that we're talking about something else. This is the Raivid in his Hasogas on the Rambam, Perek Hei Milchus Rotzeach Halacha Vav. Shliach Bezdin, what's the case? The case is a Shliach Bezdin who was sent by Bezdin to bring a criminal, or shall we say an accused criminal, to court. You know, what we call today a subpoena, right? So if you have a subpoena, then obviously the person has to show up. If he doesn't show up, you send the police. And the police will still literally drag him physically into the court. Well, what happens if the police hit him too hard? Meaning, obviously, the police don't hit him at all if they can avoid that. But if they have to, they'll hit him. But do it gently. You know, do it to the extent you have to or you need to, but not beyond. So that's a very valid, in my opinion, a very valid shot in the Mishnah, because on the one hand, the Shliach is doing what he's supposed to do. He's actually involved in the mitzvah of Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof, bringing someone to justice. But clearly he could have been more careful in the way he executed this you know, compulsory bringing him into business. It's Perek Hey. You'll look at the Rambam and the Raifin, the two Gersos and the Raifin. It's a Leib Nikasun. Fine. Good. Now we look at the Gemara. The Gemara is 12 lines up from the bottom. Olei Ahuvi Rabbanan LeRava. One of the Chachamim turns to Rava and he says the following. Mimai, how does Abba Shol know that Chativas Eitzim, the Chativas Eitzim Dereshus? Is it really true that Chativas Eitzim, cutting down trees, is always a Reshus? I can give you two cases where it's a mitzvah Dilma, Mechativas Eitzim de Sukkah, Umechativas Eitzim de Barucha. Right, every day they cut down trees for the mizbeach, the logs, you know, to burn on the mizbeach. And when sukkah comes around, you clearly have to cut down trees in order to build a sukkah. And maybe that's exactly the scenario that the Torah is talking about, or at least these two are amongst the scenarios included in Chativas Eitzim. So Reuven the murderer, when he went into this forest to cut down trees, he did so al menas for the purpose of fulfilling a mitzvah, atzei maracha, or building a sukkah. And yet the Torah says in that very scenario, you go into galus for killing someone inadvertently. So what gives you the right, Abba Shol, to exclude a case of mitzvah and say that, well, in the case of mitzvah, he's not chai of galus? Maybe the Torah, in the case of galus, is addressing the scenario of a mitzvah, whether it be A, atzei maracha, B, building a sukkah. So Rabbosai, I'm very excited about the Gemara's answer, Rav's answer to this one of the Chachamim, because I always look for a precedent in Shas for what I call lumbus. You know, some people think that Lumbus was created by Reb Chaim Brisker 100 years ago. But if you learn Shas carefully, you'll see the breakthroughs of Lumbus in Shas itself. For example, you know, people think Reb Chaim was the first to differentiate between the Gavra and the Chefetza. That's not so. The Gemara does so in more than one place, but the most explicit place, the beginning of a sector in Dara, it explains the difference between the Neder and the Shmua. Here's a case of pure lumbus. Take a look at Roman's logic. Kavan, diyamata eitz chatuv. Now here you have a slight girsa issue. You see in parentheses it says eno chotev. I don't know that we need those words. And some of the akronim just take it out. If it's in, it doesn't add much, it doesn't subtract much. But in matzah eitz chatuv, what does that mean?
It's already chopped.
It's already been chopped up, right? Somebody else did the job for him. Well, for that matter, he himself did the job earlier. Is lav mitzvah. There's no mitzvah to cut eitzim. The mitzvah is to obtain eitzim. To use eitzim, to build your sukkah, supply the maracha for you. But there's no mitzvah to cut down the trees. Oh, so you might say that it's a preparatory stage, but you see, how do I define something as a mitzvah? The Gemara postulates in the name of Rava that to define something as a mitzvah, it's got to be absolute. It's got to be unconditioned. The Torah tells me to do X and I have to do X, no matter what. If the Torah says, well, do X because no one else did it for you, then what the Torah is saying is that that X, that pu'ulah, is simply a preparatory stage, which may not be necessary to set up the mitzvah, but it's not a mitzvah per se. The word mitzvah in this context means it's absolutely compulsory. Cutting down trees is never ever compulsory. It's always only because I have to obtain trees and I don't have them. So it's necessary to do this, but that doesn't define what I call the atzmuso, the etzem mitzvah. It defines what's called a hechsher mitzvah. It's a preparatory thing. So for example, if I want to do bedikas chametz and I light the candle, should I make a bracha lahadat ner shel bedikas chametz like I do when I light ner chanukah, lahadat ner shel chanukah? What's the difference? The answer is partial, because there's an absolute independent chiyuv to light ner chanukah. The lighting of the ner chanukah is a mitzvah act. Masha ein kein, in contrast, to light the bedikas chametz candle may or may not be necessary. And even if it is necessary, it's only because of circumstances. It's a preparatory hechsher mitzvah. Now we'll see later on, we'll know that the Nitziv Mivalojin has a middle ground which is sort of equidistant from mitzvah and hechsher mitzvah. Or perhaps you can call it an upgraded hechsher mitzvah. But be that as it may, right now Rava is postulating lav mitzvah, that cutting down trees is never a mitzvah. Because even when I do it for the purpose of a mitzvah, because I don't have trees available, nevertheless, the act of cutting it down is not a mitzvah act per se. There's no kiyum mitzvah in cutting down the trees. Cutting down the trees is at best a necessary hechsher mitzvah, but not a mitzvah per se. And therefore, when the Torah says that Yechayev goes because you killed someone while you were chotev eitzim, you're cutting down trees, the Torah is clearly talking about a case which is a non-mitzvah, and therefore Abba Shol says we exclude the case of a mitzvah. In a case where you killed someone while you involved in a mitzvah act, you are exempt from goes. So basically, we could summarize this Gemara and say that the Gemara is saying that I have to have an absolute, unconditional obligation in order for something to be classified, to be defined as a mitzvah. If it's just a means to an end, meaning in order to achieve the mitzvah, I have to do X, Y, and Z, because otherwise I don't have it, that's not a mitzvah per se. We call it a hechsher mitzvah. It's only a reshus in the Gemara's language, because it's not an unconditional mitzvah. Now, even before you look at the next piece of Gemara, if you want to play this game with me and be honest about covering the next piece of Gemara, what's the Gemara going to ask now? And we can almost feed, we can almost write the text ourselves, or at least send a video, or whatever. Right? What is coming around the bend? Go back to the Mishnah again. What were the three cases in the Mishnah which are excluded from Golos by virtue of the miut of chotev eitzim, because they are killing through a mitzvah act? Let's go over it again. Av harodes beno, and we have Rebbe harav harodes talmido, and then we have shliach bezim. Would you be willing to say, you know, applying the standards of the Gemara of Rava here, that those cases are radically different than the cases of atzei maracha or Atzei Sukkah? Rava says that Atzei Sukkah and Atzei Maracha is classified as Rishus because if I already have the Eitzim, there's no need to do it. There's no absolute compulsory mitzvah to cut down trees. Then by that standard, we would say that in those three cases where it's excluded on the Chatimus Eitzim, there's some sort of absolute requirement to implement this Hakah. Is there an absolute requirement incumbent upon the father?
Isn't there another way? I mean, the hand on the neck. Not physically, but...
But I'm saying, does the father... Is the father negligent in his obligation to fulfill the Torah requirements as a father if he never hits his son?
In the situation that the son needs to be hit, yes.
But if he doesn't need to be sin, not. In other words, hitting is not absolute. Hitting is a means to an end. You know, if you want to give tochacha to your son, you might have to hit him. Now, I always say that if a kid is crossing the street, you know, against the light, or whatever, he doesn't even know about the light, the robot, or whatever, right? Then you should smack him up, right? But if he's not crossing the street like that, then who says you have to smack him up? Where does it say in the Torah that a father has to hit his son? Where does it say in the Torah that a Rebbe has to hit his Talmud? I'll grant you that maybe under certain circumstances it might be necessary to do so. But that's only to achieve an end. It's necessary if I don't have Eitzim to cut down trees for my Sukkah or for the Atzei Maruch. But that doesn't make it into a mitzvah. It makes it into a Hesher mitzvah. If I can achieve my goal without this physical violence, then for sure, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Where's the Gzeres HaKasim? No, you have to hit your son.
I think there is a remnant for some years.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to it, Arvav. I'm just, this is a pedagogical tool. I'm trying to whet your curiosity. But you see where Rava is bringing us to the brink of a river. You know, we have to drink from this river. This is a radical breakthrough. Rava, by definition, is leading us to a very revolutionary, far-reaching conclusion that hitting a son or hitting a Talmud is itself a mitzvah per se, unconditional. It's not just a means to an end. That's pretty wild. Take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Eisvei Ravina l'Rava. Ravina asks Rava the following question. It says in the Mishnah, Yotzal Av HaMakis B'Nova Rav Rodes Hamido. Vishushli Av Bezdin. Later, why not say the same logic as you? We're not talking about a mitzvah act. We're talking about Chativas Eitzim or Rishos. Came unto Ilu Gomir. If he would study properly, Lav mitzvah, you don't have to hit him if he's doing well. He's a good pupil, he's a good student, he's getting all A's. Is hashtanami lav mitzvah. So, in the case of a son, if he's learning properly, as he should, the father's not mitzvah, he's not obligated to hit him. The same thing should apply in the case of a Rebbe vis-a-vis his Talmud. Okay, Shliach Beis Din is a little different, because Shliach Beis Din, one could argue, is involved in an absolute unconditional mitzvah. I mean, we'll see about that in Tosfos in a minute. But certainly in the case of a father and a Rebbe, the hakah, the hitting, is nothing more than a hechsher mitzvah, which may be a necessary means to an end. May not be, if you could achieve the same goal without hitting him. I just want to raise a few points here. You know, when you read the Gemara, Eisvei Ravina l'Rava, you get the impression here that Rava is being held accountable. Like, this is a personal attack against Rava. Rava, you're the one who put us into the blotter here. You know, you put us deep in the mud. But I don't really appreciate that. Well, why is Rava guilty here? You know, we started with Akasha. Chativas Eitzim is classified by Abba Shol as Rishus. And we ask the question, but maybe Chativas Eitzim is a mitzvah. He's cutting down wood for his sukkah. So Rava comes along and says, well, wait a minute, cutting down wood for the sukkah is not a mitzvah. That's all Rava said. I mean, why does a Ravina pounce upon Rava? I mean, is it just because Rava was bold enough to defend the Mishnah? I mean, what I'm suggesting here is that conclusion. He's almost reformulating Abba Shaul. Abba Shaul, the Mishnah said that Chativas Eitzim is a Rishus and not a mitzvah. So Rava says, because any Chativas Eitzim is at best, if need be, a Hechsher mitzvah. But it's not a mitzvah. Could you do any better than Rava? Why is Rava being held accountable? Now you could say, no, Eisvei Ravina l'Rava means, well, Rava, you're the only one around here, so I'm going to attack you, you know. But usually when you see Eisvei so-and-so to so-and-so, it's like a personal attack. Like, you said something that's absolutely wrong. Like, he gave me the wrong answer. So I derive the conclusion here, which I don't know how to make sense out of, that the Gemara has in its back pocket an alternative approach that can completely circumvent Rava's distinction, and we can explain Abba Shaul, meaning the premise that Chativas Eitzim is by definition always a Rishus, without Rava's distinction. And that boggles my mind. I don't begin to know how to do that. But I'm bothered by something more fundamental. In Ravina's frame of reference, a father hitting his son is the same, is analogous to the case of cutting down trees for a sukkah. And it seems to me that there's a fundamental difference between the two. Does anybody? What would you say, Aaron?
One's more direct and one's not.
Well, which is which, in other words?
The father hitting the son is more direct. It's like
more direct? He's hitting him directly, you're saying?
Yeah, because...
Well, wait a minute. Cutting down the trees is also pretty direct.
Is the action on the tree, and then it falls on...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Back to the previous sugya that we did a month ago about Koko and Koa Koko, when he throws it up, and it comes down with the palm trees and the whole thing. Ah, I see.
Similar.
Now, I wanted to say, just in terms of mitzvah, if you're defining something as a mitzvah, let me give you a mashal. If I don't know if this mashal means anything to you, but I'll try it anyway, because it means a lot to me. If you learn Hilchos Shabbos, for example, the Melachos, you know, 39 Melachos, and you want to pinpoint and define exactly what constitutes the Melacha and the violation of Shabbos, then very often what you find is a series of actions. A, B, C, and B. I'll give you an example. In Melechus Bishol, for example, there's turning on the fire, this feeding the fire, this putting the pot on the fire, and the Gemara has a whole discussion how each one of these people is one. This is like a quiz question, you know, Ripley's Believe It or Not kind of question. You know, wake up somebody in the middle of the night and say, how can you, one food was cooked and five people achayev for that malach? The answer is because they each did what's called a pu'ulami pu'ula sabish. I'll give you another example. There's a malach called libun. So a libun is a malach that's made up of many different stages, each of which, in and of itself, engenders a chiyuv skila, if it was done by zechiv chatas v'shogeg. For example, if you take a garment that needs to be clean and you simply drop it into water, which is called shriya, you're chayev. Somebody else comes along, or you yourself, and starts rubbing it, that's a whole different malacha, I mean, that's a whole different pu'ula called shifshu, and that too is chayav mishum kibus. And this goes on and on throughout Melechus Shabbos, that there are many different actions, each of which can be integrated into one whole. So let's talk about a father. A father has to teach his son, or really has to teach his daughter. Well, there are many ways of teaching. There are many actions which could be incorporated, each and every one of them, into the limud, the maisa limud. So if I have to pinpoint the maisa mitzvah of a father who's obligated to teach, or a rebbe who's obligated to teach, I may come up with a whole slew of actions. Perhaps hitting a person, heaven forbid, but you have to hit him. That act of violence is a mitzvah. We've got to shut off the tape here, right? Because we'll be in deep trouble here. You know, they'll prosecute us for encouraging abuse. But if that action achieves the goal of teaching, it's not just an extra mitzvah. It's not like cutting down trees in order to cut logs, you know, for a fire on the mizbeach. This is a method of teaching. The Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah speaks about hakah, in the case of a father visiting his son, and he goes through all sorts of details, exactly how and when and what object he should use for hakah. There are many dinim. Those dinim reflect the fact that hakah is a pu'ula mi pu'ulas mitzvah salimud. There are many ways of communicating to a person, and sometimes even physical violence, if you will, you know, hitting someone is also a means of communication. But Ravina is totally oblivious to my distinction, and I think I know why. Because Ravina accuses Rava of operating with the following mechanics. According to Rava, if you want to define something as a mitzvah, you ask one question and one question only. Is it always necessary? If I can indicate that action is not always necessary, and in certain scenarios you can do without it, you can omit it, circumvent its need, then according to Rava, that itself constitutes or defines it as a reshus and not a mitzvah. So it's true. Under certain circumstances, hitting a son would constitute a mitzvah. And Ravina would accept, I think, what Rabbi Berzon presented here. That insofar as hitting a child is a means of communication, and it teaches the child, it is a mitzvah. Ravina's not denying it. But Ravina says, wait a minute, Rafi, you told me that in order to be a mitzvah, as far as our definition of Chatimus Eitzim is concerned, it has to be such that always it's a mitzvah. It's unconditional. Then that's not true, because if my son, Baruch Hashem, is doing well, if he's a top student, there's no need to hit him. So as long as I can come up with a scenario in which it's not necessary to use violence, that act of hitting, by definition, according to Rava, would not be a mitzvah. So why are you telling me that when a father hits his son, he doesn't go into galus because he's not involved in a rishus, but rather he's involved in a mitzvah? That act, although it may be a mitzvah, is not defined as a mitzvah in terms of the parsha of galus, because it's exactly the same as chatimus eitzim of sukkah. In other words, if I cut down a tree for the purpose of building a sukkah and I inadvertently kill someone, the Mishnah postulates that in such a case, I will go into galus, because that's called chatimus eitzim. The same thing should apply to a father who hits his son. So again, just to reiterate, I think from this passion of Ravina against Rava, you must derive the conclusion that our interpretation of the Gemara was incorrect. We thought that the Gemara was postulating a difference between mitzvah and hechsher mitzvah. If that be the case, then Ravina's kasha is not a kasha. Of course, although chatimus eitzim is always, by definition, at best a hechsher mitzvah, nothing more than a hechsher mitzvah, hitting a child, at least in certain situations, is a mitzvah per se. It's not a hechsher mitzvah. But rather, the distinction that Rav is making is between two types of mitzvahs. One type of mitzvah, which is absolute, and another type of mitzvah, which is conditional, and sometimes applies, and sometimes doesn't apply. In other words, Rav is basically watering down the mitzvah. If he waters down the mitzvah enough, it becomes like chatimus eitzim. How does he water down the mitzvah? By saying that, you know what? You don't necessarily have to do that action. You can achieve the mitzvah under certain circumstances without that action. That proves it's a low-grade mitzvah. So let's see Rava's answer to Ravina. Hasam, there in the case of a father. Afal gav de gomir. Rabbo said, this is one of the most sensational gemaras you'll ever see. Even if the son is learning properly, mitzvah, the father is obligated to hit him. Man. You know, we're getting from bad to worse over here. You know, it's bad enough to tell me that when necessary, father can hit his son. Now you tell me when it's unnecessary, there's a mitzvah to hit your son. So I would suggest the following. Again, this is just a... what should I say? I'm down and out, so I'm very desperate. I'm going to take a stab at this. In medicine, I don't know the beans about medicine, but in medicine, there's something called preventative medicine, correct? In other words, sometimes a perfectly healthy person, the doctor will prescribe that he take certain medications lest he be exposed down the line to a certain disease or whatever it might be. Preventative medicine. You know, my father used to tell me, I don't know if he had historical proof of this, that the father of the concept of preventative medicine was none other than the Rambam. I don't know. You know, the Rambam was a great physician in the Sultan's court, but whether he invented, you know, the phrase prevention is 9/10 of the cure, I don't know. So too, when you're raising a child, there are certain actions, certain behavior which train the child, discipline the child, and are meaningful even though the child is acting and growing properly. It's preventative medicine, meaning, again, I wouldn't hit him with full force, but maybe some sort of slap on the hand can in some way raise the child to discipline so that later in life, I don't mean later in life, you know, when he's 20 years old, but I mean, as he grows up, if temptation arises, he still feels a little bit of the impact, the sting of that hot dog. Okay, whatever it is, you know, Darshin in time of the Kral, Lo Darshin in the Kral, I don't know. The Gemara is going to now quote a pasuk and prove from this pasuk that a father is obligated to hit his son. This is one of those mitzvahs that's gone out of vogue. I don't know too many fathers today. I mean, I actually knew a father of one of my close chums growing up who used to beat my friend to the pulp in front of me. I still have memories of him. But he came from a different culture. I don't want to get into it anyway. But Dichsiv, how do we know that there's a mitzvah for a father to hit his child? And the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Mishlei. You know, we quote Mishlei, we have two different reactions. On the one hand, we're quoting the Chacham Mikolano. But on the other hand, it's not a pasuk in Tanakh, in the Torah. And Shlomo Melech says, Yaser b'nchav yanichecha v'itein madanim l'nafshecha. The two parts of this pasuk. Number one, if you inflict this suffering on your son, meaning a hitting of your son, then yanichecha, which I think means he'll leave you to be, meaning you won't suffer agmas nefesh from him. But that's only avoiding some agmas nefesh. The second part of the pasuk goes even further. V'itein madanim l'nafshecha. You'll even have nachas, in a positive sense, from your son. So maybe if we only had the first part of the pasuk, Yaser bin Chav Yanichecha, we would say that inflicting some sort of a smack on your child would only be meaningful if need be to prevent Armas Nefesh. But when Shlomo Melech goes a step further and he says that there's a positive value to hitting a child, for a father to hit his child, Yitei Madanim L'Nafshecha, maybe he's going further and he's imposing an absolute chiyuv to do so. The Gemara never turns around and asks about a Rebbe vis-a-vis Talmud. And I have the suspicion that the Gemara is working with the premise that a father is a Rebbe and a Rebbe is a father. They're both the same. So in other words, it is a mitzvah act, unconditional, for a father to hit his son, a Rebbe to hit his Talmud. Tosis is bothered here. Dibra Maschil Af, with the case of Shliach Besed. He says the following, Vim Tomar. The Kolokom Kasha Mishliach Besed, the Kema Deilu Loka Kvar, Lav Mitzvah Kolom. Very strange Tosfos. Tosfos says the following. If the Shliach Besed is hitting someone who's already received his malchus, then the Shliach Besed is not being mekayem any mitzvah. Does that make sense? Why would that be a kasha on the Gemara? Again, let's reiterate Tosfos' kasha. Tosfos is saying that if you already had trees, you don't have to cut down trees, and therefore it makes it into a reshus. And in the case of Shliach Besed, it encounters a mitzvah. It says, oh, so why not? Just like you say, if you had trees, you wouldn't have to cut down trees, therefore it's not a mitzvah. So too, if this guy had already been given malchus, and now the Shliach is giving him malchus, there's no mitzvah. Does that make sense?
Anybody? The requirements to compare it to, does that make sense?
Well,
wait a minute. Ari, you can tell me that every mitzvah is not a mitzvah. Why? Because had I done the mitzvah, it's not a mitzvah. I already fulfilled my mitzvah.
No,
it'd be like, I don't get it.
Like, well, no.
Wait, let's just start on the finish. You're wrong, John.
It'd be like the lachos neiros for Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Like, so.
So lachos neiros is not a mitzvah. Why? Because if you already lit the candles, there's no mitzvah to light them again, right?
Right.
So now neiros Hanukkah is not a mitzvah. Meaning, if so,
any action conditional, once you've already fulfilled what you're supposed to fulfill, is no longer a mitzvah. So the 39th was, but the 40th is no longer a mitzvah.
Ah, so wait a minute. So let's think about what you're saying. So first of all, again, you know, as I told you before, the sheet of Rashi here is unclear. We really don't understand exactly what Rashi means here. Is Rashi saying that the guy died on the 39th lash, which we thought was Onis, or is he saying that he added a 40th lash, which is Mezu? Here we're excluding Shliach Besed because he's involved in a mitzvah. It's very hard to say that when he gets the lash on the 40, he's involved in a mitzvah. Jonathan, what do you want to say?
So it's not a mitzvah. The obligation of dinim is not an obligation on the individual. It's an obligation on the rabbin. So the Shliach Beis Din's mitzvah per se is not his own personal mitzvah. He's the shliach, right? So it's not like you ask like person, like, oh, did you eat matzah? Oh, did you whatever? Did you beat anyone? You know, it's not like a
And how are you reading this into Tosas? Again, Tosas being Tomar
personally doesn't have an obligation to beat someone because someone else can do it.
Whereas a father,
as a father, no one else can do it. So it's almost.
So, but again, you know, if somebody's got to do the mitzvah, so that somebody.
But it doesn't have to be me. And he has, correct. He has an element of negligence by being that person.
But I'm asking, is he. Are we robbing a Shliach Beis Din of his status as someone who's Osek B'mitzvah simply because it could have been somebody else? He was appointed as the Shliach Beis Din, you know, not just for this. He's probably, you know, the upstanding Shliach Beis Din of that particular Beis Din. He's implementing his chiyuv. You know, if there was a bracha on this mitzvah, I think he would make the bracha. You know, somebody has to go up and do it. Look at Tosa's answer. He says, Yeshomar, to be kovakom ika mitzvah mitchila. What does it mean, mitchila? That's also an ambiguous root phrase. Anyway, I did some research on this Tosa's, and I found one of the achronim says something which I can't begin to fathom. I don't know exactly what he means. He says that Tosa's is talking about the following scenario. The person was Chayav Malkus. The Shliach Beis Din started fulfilling the Malkus, that's his word, Mitchila, right? He gave him X number of lashes, whatever that number is, it doesn't matter. And then he stopped. Somehow, midway, he terminated. So the halacha is, in such a case, the criminal goes free. I think there's something in Latin also similar to this. Anybody know what I'm referring to? Daniel, would you be able to fill me in on this? You know what I'm talking about where... What's it called? Maybe it's double jeopardy, but sometimes, you know, where there's a fluke and they don't even call him back, you know, for the right punishment. They let him go.
Acquittal?
What?
An acquittal?
No. What happened was that because of some fluke, they gave him something that wasn't the real full punishment, but he's off the hook. Anyway. Yeah, right. But you never heard this? There's even a story in the Holocaust, you know, about somehow they closed the doors of the gas chambers and one person was left out, so anyway, whatever it is. So that's the law of Malkus. So the Achronim want to suggest that that's what Tosfos is talking about. He's saying that there is a situation where even though the Shliach Beis Din is involved in a mitzvah, but he doesn't have to hit it. In other words, if let's say there were two Shluchei Beis Din, there's Reuven and Shimon. So Shimon is now hitting the accused, the criminal, but Reuven had already implemented a certain number of malchus, and therefore the accused, the criminal, is now let off free. And Tosa says that since in that scenario, the Shliach Beis Din would not be involved in a mitzvah, I've already come up now with a construct in which a Shliach Beis Din who's dishing out malchus within the number of 39, right? But nevertheless, he's not involved in a mitzvah. His actions are not necessary. And Tosa's answer is no. When the first Shliach Beis Din hit him, he was involved in a mitzvah. So hitting now the second Shliach Beis Din is no longer functioning as a Shliach Beis Din. In any event, let's look at the second half of this. This is a little bit easy. Tosa says the following. The lech lemeimar nami kevon de'ilu lo chata lav mitzvah. Right. According to you, Rava, it's only considered a mitzvah, it's absolute and unconditional. Well, what happens if the person never sinned? It's only if he sinned that we engender a mitzvah of hitting him And it's the best of the Malkus. But maybe he wouldn't, if he wouldn't have sinned at all, the mitzvah wouldn't have come into existence. So it's almost as if Tosfos is saying that any mitzvah that's conditional in terms of what I call the hishavus hachiyuv, meaning to generate the chiyuv, we need X to take place, that would not be a mitzvah. So for example, if I'm building a makkah on my roof, and I kill someone, am I involved in a mitzvah? You don't make a bracha on building a makkah. Did you know that? The next time you build a makkah, remind yourself to make a bracha. But it would not constitute a mitzvah because that mitzvah of makkah is conditional. If I hadn't owned a house with a roof, and the roof has to be slanted, then I wouldn't be chayv in the mitzvah of makkah. So if this guy didn't eat chazer, he wouldn't be chayv malchus because he wasn't the chotem. So basically, any mitzvah that's conditional because the chiyuv is engendered by a condition that has to be fulfilled. For example, I have to wear a garment of four knuffos in order to be chayv in tzitzis. So when I wear that garment, I'm not involved in a mitzvah, according to the definition. Why? Because I didn't have to wear that garment, or I didn't have to wear a four-cornered garment.
There are mitzvahs that don't fall in that category,
right? Correct. But I'm just saying, you've really expanded your definition of reshus now. Reshus includes any mitzvah that's conditional on something that has to occur in order for the mitzvah to emerge. You know, that something precipitates the mitzvah. So Tosfos answers, he says, Dahi lav shliach bez din mikri. Because had he not sinned, if there was no criminal act that was violated, then there would be no shliach bez din. Lo dami lo rabo vi aviv sheli olam deli olam shmo. What's this tes over here? Olav. He's always a father, as far as his son is concerned, as far as his Talmud is concerned. So, in other words, Tosfos is clarifying that the fact that a mitzvah is conditional, that doesn't rob it or detract from its status as a mitzvah, insofar as he's exempt from goals to kill someone involved when he's involved in that mitzvah. In the case of a shliach bezdin, we cannot raise the objection, well, maybe the guy wouldn't have sinned, and therefore the mitzvah is conditional. No. If the guy didn't sin, then we're not talking about a shliach bezdin. When we talk about a shliach bezdin, we're assuming that there was a chotem, who's chayav malchus. In the case of the av or the rav, Ravina's objection is that he's always called a Rav, he's always called an Av. Will he be chayv to his son or his student? Well, that's conditional, and therefore it's not a mitzvah. And the Gemara answers no. There's an unconditional, absolute mitzvah for a father to his son and Rebbe to his son. Hadar Amar Rav. Rav changed his mind. Okay, everyone's entitled to change their mind. La Bilsi Diyam. What I told you was totally unnecessary. Let's go back to the original question. How did Abishol know that Chativas Eitz is Rishus? Maybe Chativas Eitz is Mitzvah. He's cutting down trees for the Maracha or for the Sukkah. Says Rav, you know what? I should have given you a better answer. Because if you read the Pasuk carefully, it says, Va'asher Yovo Esrei Eru Bayar Lachtov Eitz. The opening word in this Pasuk is Asher. Asher means if he happens to be cutting down trees and he kills someone. Asher indicates Rishus. Diboy ayil iboy loar. When the Torah says Asher Yovo El Esrei Biyar, it means he decided, just made up this decision in his mind to go into the Yar. That's called Asher. The Isal Kedaitach, and if as you thought your question, mitzvah, that he had an obligation to go into the yard. Misagi de lo ayil. The word asher would be totally inappropriate. Because misagi de lo ayil would be enough that he doesn't go in. He's obligated to go in. He has to cut the trees. He doesn't have trees for his sukkah for the Maracha. We must be talking about a case of chativa shel reshus. It seems to me that it's possible that Rava now makes an about face and he believes that chativas eitzim, for the sake of a sukkah, is considered a mitzvah. And therefore, the Gemara's kash is very appropriate. maybe the case of Asher Yavoi Esrei Bayar is a case where he's cutting it down for a sukkah, and it's a mitzvah. How do you know to exclude a mitzvah? So now Rava comes to the conclusion that yes, cutting down trees for a sukkah is a mitzvah. Correct? So how do we know that the Chativas Eitzim in our parsha of Golus is Chativas Eitzim Durshus? Maybe it was Chativas Eitzim to sukkah. The answer is because of the word Asher. The word Asher means he happens to chance upon a yar. He goes into a yar. Asher Yavo, he decided, it was a whimsical decision on his part to go into the yard. But if this be the case, Rabbi, so we have to come to grips with the following question: is cutting down trees for a sukkah a mitzvah? If that was Ravina's havamina in the beginning, which I'm not sure it was, okay, I can tolerate a havamina. But now we're saying that Rabbi Maskana holds that cutting down trees for a sukkah is a mitzvah. How can it be a mitzvah? So here's where I wanted to quote the Nitziv. The Nitziv Mival Lashon. This I heard from Rav Shechter many, many years ago when I was learning the Torah. The Nitziv says that there's something in between mitzvah and reshus, a middle category. He calls it a hechsher mitzvah ksuva b'Torah. That the Torah itself formulates the hechsher mitzvah. In the case of sukkah, the Torah says,
"Make for yourself."
Tasu, shivas yomim tasu sukkas. And since the Torah uses the word tasu, it tells me that I have to build a sukkah. That's a heshev mitzvah kosev Torah, and that's upgraded to a status of a quasi mitzvah. It's not a full fledged mitzvah; it's not counted in the Taryat, but it is a mitzvah. So, for example, Yerushalmi in sukkah has a bracha for building a sukkah. The Bavli speaks about reciting Shekhiyanu when you build a sukkah. But that's, the Bavli is not really relevant, because the Shekhiyanu of building a sukkah, which we're not knowing anyway, well, I think you'll find it in the Mishnah Berurah, but that Shekhiyanu is really related not to the building of the sukkah, but to the sitting of a sukkah. For example, the Bavli says that when you put together the Dalet Minim in an Agah, you make a book of Shekhiyonu. In other words, whenever you embark on the first stage of a mitzvah, even though what you're doing is not the mitzvah per se, in the case of sukkah, the Torah requires yeshiva b'sukkah, in the case of Dalet Minim, the Torah requires lekicha, but nevertheless, setting up the Chetz Shal mitzvah is already an introduction to the mitzvah requires Shekhiyonu. Not so in Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi actually has a bracha on B'niyas Sukkah. I'm not exactly sure at what point you would recite that bracha. Is it when you put up the tefaros? Or more likely when you put on what? On the schach. Yeah, because the mitzvah of building a sukkah is not the tefaros, I don't think. I think it's the schach. I don't know. In any event, that has to be... That has to be
before, and then you do all that hassle.
Right. The only problem with my pshat is, what am I going to do with atzei marocha? In other words, I might be able to get away with chativas eitzim for sukkah. Maybe that's called tasu, and it's the fulfillment of a mitzvah as a hefshe mitzvah ksuv b'Torah. I don't know if we can apply the same rule to atzei marocha. So, if somebody has time to open up Vayikra Vav, you know, that's the parasha of atzei marocha. See if we can find some pasuk there that might help. Okay. Let's go on, Rav Yosef. Amalei Rav Ada Bar Ava L'Rava. You have this about four lines up from the bottom of the page. Rav, you're still not in the clear. Kol Heichel L'Ksiv Asher. Whenever you see the word Asher in the Torah, D'Iboi, who it means if he decides to do so, and it's simply a reflection of his whimsical desire. El Amiyat, if that be the case, what are you going to do with a pasuk in Bamidbar, Perek Yutes, which speaks about an adam tame, a person who's tame, and he goes into the Migdash, he's got courage for that, and he does it deliberately. Isha asher yitma v'lo yischata. Now the word asher means that he wasn't obligated to do so. On the contrary, asher, according to Rav, means He did it on his own. See, he became Tomei on his own. Did anybody force him? Did the Torah require him to be Tomei? No. So he contracted Tumah because of Hashem, his own decision. And then he went into the Mikdash. So he's Chayav Kares. According to you, Rava, since the Torah says Hasher Yitmah, Iboy Mitame, Iboy Lo Mitame, it means he was in a free choice decision. He could have decided to become Tomei or not become Tomei. What are we going to say about a case where I'm obligated to become Tomei? When am I obligated to become Tomei?
Meis Mitzvah.
A Meis Mitzvah or one of the Zayin Krovim. Right? Yushalmi, very famous Yushalmi and Nazir, that there was a relative who didn't want to be Mitame to his mess and they pushed him. He was a Kohen. That's a Mitzvah. The Losagi law Mitame, he's required according to Torah law to contract Tumah. Is Hachinami the pot if he goes into the Mikdash afterwards? Then he's exempt from punishment because it says Asher Yitma and he's not Asher Yitma. You see, I'm bothered a little by this objection of Rav Adam Aram because here the Chiyuv is not for the Asher Yitma. The Chiyuv is for what? Es Mikdash Hashem Time, that he went into the Mikdash. So it could be that what Rav is talking about Asher Yavo Esrayehu Bayar, he's saying that the word Asher tells me that there was no law or mitzvah that compelled him to go into the Yar. That was Asher. As opposed to someone who's required to go into the Yar. For example, he has to find logs for his sukkah. But here in the case of a Tomei Shebichas Mikdash, which is Chayav Kares Bias Mikdash B'tumah, there, what difference does it make why or how he contracted Tumah? He's a Tomei. He contracted Tumah on Sunday, and on Monday he decides to go into the Mikdash. So you're talking about Sunday he was involved in the Mesmitz, so what? His Tumah is not any different qualitatively than the Tumah of someone who happens to chance upon a dead body. But it seems like the Gemara understands that Rava, whenever he sees the word Asher, he employs a mute. Asher is coming to exclude a case of a mitzvah. So when the Torah says Asher Yitma, and then he has Mikdash Hashem Time, the entire parasha from beginning to end is coming to exclude the case of a mitzvah. So that means that a person who contracted Tumah because of his Osek B'Kvuras Mes Mitzvah, and then he deliberately goes into the Mikdash as part of it. The Gemara says that cannot be. We don't know that to be the case. So Rava answers, Shiny Hassan, there it's different. The Amar Krad, here we turn to page. Chesam Beis, Tomei Yihyeh. There's an extra word, Yihyeh, in the Pasuk. So it says, Yihyeh, Mikol Makom. Whenever you see an extra word, it comes to expand the circumference of cases. So here it's coming to include the case of someone who was Tomei Litzarch Mesmitz. And he too is included in the parsha of Es Mikdash Hashem Timei V'Nichris. Now Rav Adam Arava turns around and asks Rav another kasha. You want to tell me that the word Yiyah is to include a case of Mes Mitzvah? Ha'hubi Boile, I need that for something else. Look at the Tanya's, we learned in the Brisa, Tomei Yiyah L'Rabos Tvul Yom. Tzuliyah was a person who became Tomei when it came to the very last day of his Tumah, and he's allowed to go into the mikvah during the day itself. That's called the Tzuliyah. And then, before Harev Shemesh, before the sun sets, he went into the Mikdash. He's also Chayav Kares, and he's included on the word Yiyah. And then it says Tumaso Bo. L'rabos b'chusar kippurim. That zav zava, you'll let us in the Torah. These are four categories of people who, even after purification of the mikvah, they still enjoy from going into the mikdash until they bring their karma. That's called the b'chusar kippurim. They brought their karma. So a person was married shemesh, it's after sunset, but nevertheless he can't bring his karma until the next morning because karbanos, the basic thing, is only open for business in the day. So he's called the b'chusar kippurim. And something tells me, my first shiur here was on Shavuos night. I think I spoke about Mechusa Kapara. Well, if I didn't, if everyone's forgotten it, then you know, they say up to a year, you know, people, if it's a story, you have to wait more than a year. But if it's halacha, some say even the next week, nobody will know that you're busy. So anyway, the Mechusa Kapara went into the Migdash, and he's chayav, even though he's retiring himself. And that's included under the Tumas Obov. Bottom line is, the word Yia cannot be free for the case of Oseik B'mes Mitzvah, because we need it for the case of Tvul Yom. Amar Leih, Rav Etzes, Ana, I have another pasuk. It says, Od Tumas Obov. And the word Od is completely superfluous. Ka'amina, that's what I meant. That's going to teach me the case of Nitma Lemes Mitzvah. Ika Damasti Le Aha. Some say that the Gemara's Kasha, how do you know the Chativas ate in his Rishus? Maybe he was cutting down trees for Sukkah. Aha was asked on Rava from a whole different context. It was not asked in a context of goals. It was in a different Masechta, so to speak. And just by way of introduction, I'll mention to you that the Torah says in Parshas Ki Tisa, Sheshes Yomim Kavod, Ubayom Hashvi Tishvos, Becharish Ubekotzin Tishvos. So just shooting from the hip, what would you say is the context of that pasuk? Anybody? I'll read it again. The pasuk says, Sheshes Yomim Kavod, Ubayom Hashvi Tishvos, Becharish Ubekotzin Tishvos.
Shabbos,
right? So Gemara says name. It's not referring to Shabbos. It's referring to Shemitah, correct? This is our introduction to Shemitah. Hey, after tonight's shiur, we don't have to have a shiur tomorrow. So I've already given my introduction. So we can start with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says it's impossible to learn that this pasuk is referring to Shabbos, because the Torah isolates Chorish and Katzi. Those are 2 out of 39 malachas. So how could it be referring to Shabbos? But rather the Torah is referring to Shemitah. And even though it says Sheshes Yomim, the word Yomim in this context means Shonim. Sometimes a Yom is called a Shonim. So we're talking about 6 years in which you do your malacha, all the work in the fields. And on the 7th year you rest and desist from malacha. And then the Torah specifies Chorish V'Katz. Why does the Torah specify Chorish V'Katz? What's the chiddush of Chorish V'Katz? Is the Torah simply establishing that during the Shemitah year you're not allowed to thresh your field? You're not allowed to harvest your field? Says Rabbi Akiva, no, ain't no tzarek. That's totally unnecessary. I don't need any tzarek lomar Chorish Shal Shvitz or Katzir Shal Shvitz. Sharei Kfar Nemar, the Torah spells this out. In this week's parasha, in Parashas Bahar, it says, Sod Chalotizma, Kama Chalotizma. And then it says a sviach tzirchol otikhtza. It doesn't say anything about harisha, by the way, but it does explicitly mention tzira, harvesting. So the Torah's already told me, black and white, that you're not allowed to harvest during Shemitah. So why is the Torah repeating that? Ella says Rabbi Akiva, afilu charishal erev shvius shenitnas l'shvius, and also even katzir shal shvius sheyotzel motzoy shvius. So Rashi explains. You're enjoying from threshing the ground and preparing it for seeding in the 6th year. If it's meaningful for the Shvius. So again, we can have various sugyas in Shvita about how close to the 7th year do you already have a prohibition of threshing the ground because it's meaningful for sowing the ground in Shvius. Katzir shel Shvius yotzim motzoi Shvius, says Rashi, in a via shlish the Shvius. In other words, even though these grains or this crop only grew 1/3, whatever that means, I mean, for that you have to be a baki and zroim to know what havah shlish is. Probably literally spent 6 months trying to figure out what havah shlish is. Well, whatever it is, it's not completely grown and developed. Nevertheless, since the beginning of the process of growth took place in Shvius, therefore the fruits that grow in Shminis have Kedusha Shvius. Because Kedusha, that's why, for example, Rabbo said, we're going to have problems with wine, for example, for the next 5 years. I don't know how many years.
Right?
No, because there's certain fruits and vegetables that begin their growth during the seventh year, but they'll be sold on the market after they ripen for years down the line. So when we, you know, when we learn Hilchos Shviyos, we're not just learning the laws that apply to that year. I mean, it's going to really impact on us for years to come. But basically the law is that if the fruit already has Kedusha Shviyos, even though it hasn't grown yet, but during Shviyos it took root and it developed to the point of what's called Amar Shlish, whatever that is. Therefore, even though the majority of the growth and development of the fruit or vegetation took place during the Shviyos, the eighth year, it still has Kedusha Shviyos. And all this Rabbi Akiva derives from the Pasuk, Becharish Uvekatzir Tishbos. So Rabbi Akiva says, I have a different understanding of this Chiddush of Becharish Uvekatzir Tishbos. And really we're referring to Shabbos. And if we're referring to Shabbos, why does the Torah have to add Charish and Katsira? Those are two out of 39 malachas. Says Rabbi Yishmael, Mach Charish Rishus, Avkotzir Rishus. The Torah wants to tell you that you're chayav for violating Shabbos if you do a Charisha of Rishus, because Charisha is always Rishus. There's no mitzvah to thresh the ground. How do you say Charisha in English? Threshing?
I thought it was plowing.
Plowing, okay, plowing. Okay. Threshing is something else. I'm sorry, I correct my lemafreya, I correct everything I said. I didn't say plowing. Yotza Katsir, there is one case of Katsir which is not dumya, it's not similar to Charish, it's not a Rishus, but it's a mitzvah. When do we have mitzvah to harvest something? Ha'omer, right? Last night we counted, what, 22? Huh. So the Omer is a mitzvah. So let's say a person cut down the Omer on Shabbos, he would not be in violation of Shabbos. Only Ahubi Rabban on the Rava, so that same Chacham that we saw before pops up to Rava and he says, Mimai, how does Rabbi Shmuel know the Charisha the Rishus? The Charisha the Rishus? Dilma Charishas Omer? Maybe he was sowing. No, what was the word again? Plowing. Excuse me. Plowing the ground in order to plant the Omer, the mitzvah. And that's a mitzvah. The Afilu Haki Omer Rachmon and Tishbos. And yet the Torah says, you have to desist. So the Gemara answers, Omer Lei, came with the Matzah Choresh and Choresh, Lav Mitzvah. Here's where Rabbi gave his logic. There's no mitzvah of plowing the ground for the sake of Omer. If it was already plowed, if somebody plowed or you plowed or somebody else, there's no mitzvah to plow. And therefore, Charisha by definition is Rishus, it's not mitzvah, and the Torah compares Katsira to Charisha to tell you that what Katsira involves a violation of Shabbos, only a Katsira of Rishus, a Katsira of the Omer, where the Torah explicitly commands us to cut down the Omer. Cutting down the Omer is a mitzvah. It takes place on the night before the Omer is actually brought. That act of Katsira, if done on Shabbos for the Omer, is not included in the Easter Shabbos. That's how Rabbi Shmuel learns this also. Okay, we'll see.
We have Mark, yeah?
How are we looking?
There's a few guys in there, I think we have.
Yeah. How many are we here? We're seven?
Well, okay. would attach, and it wasn't, you didn't have the mitzvah of six.
Do we have a shlip tzibur?
You're saying for that old version,
now you can actually,
yeah.